Welcome, everybody, to our Inspiring Leaders podcast. My name is Mark Barber, Director of Content at Critical Eye. And today I'm delighted to have Critical Eye's CEO, Matthew Blagg, with us today to share his thoughts on the landscape for businesses in 2024. Hello, Matthew. How are you?
I'm incredibly well, Mark. Very much so. And looking forward to a vibrant 24.
Okay, well, that'd be good to get into, because I think there are a mix of opinions around what 2024 looks like. I mean, if we use that as a starting point, because it is a chat about the landscape, what sort of picture would you paint in terms of the complexity, I guess, that businesses are facing at present?
I think that's the word for 24. It's complex, where all bets are on the table. I think you can make a strong case for faster economic growth, and you can make a strong case for deceleration. And I think that makes it particularly difficult for leaders to navigate, and it makes it particularly difficult to drive long-term strategy, which is, you know, the trend of last year was to become more tactical. And I think we're going to start the year in that vein. I think the hope for the year is actually, as you get into the second half of the year, opportunities accelerate. So for me, the key thing for leaders sitting right now is to start really fast, drive hard in the business, and position yourself for an uptick as you get into the second half of the year. I think the caveat behind that is the geopolitical landscape is going to be weird, isn't it? Because you've got multi-elections coming through.
Yep.
Question mark around interest rates, are they going up, down? There's strong cases for both, which oscillate almost on a daily basis. I don't think that will change. I think that you've got the cost inflation still coming through, and there's still a huge amount of uncertainty. So I think that the backdrop is, I think that you're starting to the year, I think, you know, with some clarity around the sort of, it's going to be complex. I think you could see an easing of some of that complexity to create more opportunity, or you could see a hardening, and that makes it more difficult in terms of how you plan.
Okay, let's try to unpick some of those comments. I mean, around interest rates, so if you look at the UK, there's a view, if you speak to a number of economists and advisors, that we've kind of bottomed out, we can expect interest rates to come down. But then you've still got a high inflationary environment, and arguably, say in the UK, it's much stickier inflation than maybe when you look at, say, the US or across the EU. What's your take on that, and, you know, from a business perspective?
Well, the one thing that you and I both know about economists is that they're brilliant at telling you why things happened after it happened. They're not necessarily great forecasters, and the better economists are very open around that. I think that what you can say is that there is more chatter around the fact that interest rates might have plateaued or might come down.
Yep.
But inflation is still retaining relatively high position. The cost of capital is still going to come through more next year than this year, simply because of the amount of debt, whether that's household debt or corporate debt, coming on the market. And that's going to drive cost inflation through organizations. So I think it's the tricky to read which way it will go. And I suppose that then links back to this geopolitical scenario. You've got elections coming through. What implication does that have? It's difficult to read. I think you've got to watch wage inflation very closely. If wage inflation doesn't come down and continue to come down, I think you're going to see interest rates holding or higher. And that's the big question mark.
Employment's an interesting one as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. And again, it's been pretty resilient. So
yeah, there has been a lot of expectations.
It has been. And I think that, I mean, what I can tell you is that across our Critical Eye landscape, sort of operational performance is absolutely at the front line of everyone's viewpoint. Organizational structures, making sure they're optimum. I mean, in an environment where capital is more expensive, sort of optimization remains key. So if you do look at sort of key metrics for this year, you're going to want to make sure that you're operating in a tight position. And that generally doesn't mean to say that you're going to have an excessive headcount. So, but the likelihood is that it will remain a relatively tight environment. That doesn't mean to say, though, that you won't have wage inflation, because you've still got some structural things coming through and through that might take time, and you've still got skill shortages. So
Yes.
I think you've got a complex landscape where, you know, you are seeing unemployment tick up a bit, but not extravagantly. But there is still pressure in terms of the right resources in the right place, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. So looking at some of the research that we conduct at our retreats, and we've just had our CEO retreat, our CFO retreat, and our Asia leadership retreat. We ask people to identify the sort of top areas that they're prioritizing over the coming year. And in each of them, within the top five, you've got improved business performance, a new tech, which includes, as you would imagine, the term of the year, AI, and machine learning. And it's interesting, it's across each of the areas in different geographies as well. It's improved business performance, it's looking at new technology, which feeds into the point that you're making, doesn't it? Where it's looking at how to optimize performance and organizational capability, I guess.
Yeah, and that's true on a corporate level and on a personal level. You know, at the end of the day, with capital going up, you then start looking at, do I need things? Do I really need things? You know, you look at your house slightly differently in terms of what it needs. So you're, I think in 24, you'll see the consumer trends that are the outcome of that higher cost of capital, because it really will be prevalent across the marketplace. And again, it takes time for high interest costs to come really into the marketplace. And I think next year you'll see the implication of it. I think if you do see interest rates come off, I think you will then see more ambition and more opportunity for organizations. It's just that big if at the moment. And with elections, historically, when you've got elections, it's the year after the elections where the economic return comes. And probably that's the case over the next 12 months.
Yeah. And just to illustrate that, so you've got the election in Taiwan, which obviously feeds into tensions between the US and China. Obviously, there's the US election. Trump is looking stronger by the day. UK, there's no dates been called as yet, as far as I'm aware, but obviously that will happen in 24. Russia, Putin will be likely to get his fifth term. And then there's the European Parliament as well. So it is. I mean, the conversations again when we were in Singapore recently for our retreat, the geopolitical situation. I mean, it's right up there, isn't it, in terms of the risk register for businesses at present.
It's up there, but I'd say that the macro position from a leadership perspective is less relevant than the implications on your individual organization. And what do I mean by that? I mean, ultimately, corporate affairs, the interrelationship with government, regulatory structures, that's the implication that I think is more prevalent than necessarily the wider geopolitical sort of landscape, which is hard to read and possibly doesn't have an immediate impact on your organization. And I think what you do have to do in leadership at the moment is really be brutally clear about the things you can influence.
Okay.
So do I think as a leader this year, you know, you are going to need to have world-class corporate affairs and regulatory involvement? Yes, you are. Are you going to have much of an issue about the bigger picture than that? Probably not. So I think that the focus on what you can achieve, make sure that you really are clear in terms of the areas that you can win in the year. And I think those leaders that get that from the beginning of the year will make a big difference.
Okay. Speaking to one of the attendees at our retreat, the comment was made there is too much cautiousness currently. Companies thrive when they make big calls in tough times. Is that does that sort of echo your thinking and this idea about real clarity about where you need to be as a business? It will vary by sector, I appreciate.
I think usually in life and historically, those that are counter-cyclical outperform those that follow the trend. So, you know, yes, big calls make big returns. The only thing is that you also, this history is listed with a huge number of people who made big calls at the wrong time. So, you I think that that is the sort of challenge. What I would say with high interest rates, if they retain high, big calls are more difficult because the access to capital
Is the big
and
thing.
then the pressure on the capital does make it more difficult. And that is why you're seeing, across critical eye, CFOs have a stronger stance in terms of strategic decision making, the boards being wanting to analyze more. So there is more hesitance on that. Conversely, though, private equity capital, there's a huge amount there to deploy. So there is no question that there is huge opportunity and opportunity to restructure sectorally. So, but it is about making sure that you've got capital clarity, because if you get in the wrong place on that, I think you're going to be in trouble.
Do you think some businesses are challenged by a lack of experience of how to operate in these market conditions?
I was speaking to a chair of a large group 2 days ago, and that was exactly the discussion that we were having, is the competency around the table. And their feeling was that there's quite a lot of experience that has now moved plural, and now you've got quite an inexperienced executive environment where they don't have those reference points, and there's a danger that that pressure builds on them. My slight caveat to that is that these environments make leadership. So I think there is a generational change. I think it's a massive opportunity for society, actually, if you harness that. And I think it's a huge organizational opportunity. And I think if you've got experience, but you're not match fit, I think it's a good time to get out. And at the
Do
end there,
you
you've got to
see
run hard.
a bit of that as well?
I think you've always got those things going on. I mean, if you take the period 09, 10, in terms of post the financial collapse, massive leadership change. If you look at the businesses that emerged from that, huge. I think you'll see the same issues emerging. I mean, it is an environment where the pace is really relentless. So, if you're capitally independent, you've been there and done it, and are you as motivated? Do you really have the energy to drive at the pace that's required? And that's absolutely going to go on. Now, I think you've then got inexperienced executives coming into a highly charged stakeholder environment. And I think there's a real danger that they run into that and can land themselves in trouble. It's why, this sort of need for mentoring and the pieces of work that we do are so important in this market.
Okay, because you are seeing more new CEOs being appointed, new chairs coming in,
Correct.
and there's you've got to hit the ground running, haven't you? Like you say, from a stakeholder perspective, if you look at the sort of, I mean, from a public company perspective, it's difficult with shareholders at present. How you're managing that investor relations piece?
I think that the observation through our work at Critical Eye, leadership is becoming increasingly tactical, and I think that's a big worry. And I think that is the danger of less experienced can get focused on the short-term reaction rather than the long-term pattern. And I think if you're driving that agenda at a pace that's relentless, I think it becomes dangerous.
And
So
to break that down, when you talk about tactical behaviours, now there's always a balancing act between short and long term. But where do you see some of those tactical behaviours playing out, and what do you see as some of the potential consequences of that?
two great examples of work that's going on in Critical Eye, where we're working across executive teams. And in both cases, you've got internal challenge at the executive level between some of the group functions and the division P&L owners. And if I'm honest, that tension's there's a degree of healthy tension, but I would say it's crossing into less healthy tension.
Okay.
And I would observe that their biggest challenge is that they're so busy. They don't actually spend time together. And I think that's where their problem lie, because actually, if they're able to sit outside the structure of their business and actually talk it through, I think they get to the solution much quicker. Whereas some of that pressure is meaning they're becoming quite reactive. And I think in this environment, that is quite common. And so the ability to not react, and I think in leadership, often the important thing is to try and get things out of people's way. I think there's a danger that because of all of that pressure, it adds to the intro. And I would say that's true regardless of your ownership structure. I mean, I was with the chairman of a private equity backed group a few days ago, and the big comment was PE backers are now expecting much more information flow. They've got partners who personally feel, talking about their liability and exposure,
They're exposed, yep.
and as such, they're more involved. And the comment is that they're bogging the business down. And so, again, I don't think it matters your ownership style. I think there's a danger that the stakeholder community, and whether it's shareholders, whether it's government, become more involved, and at the end of the day, that just bogs the organization down. Right at a point when leadership is about trying to go faster and pushing, you can end up internal. And if you end up internal in a tight marketplace, I don't think it's good.
Who should be driving that conversation to so that the senior leadership can step back and just take a look at that medium to long-term view of what's happening in the business? Because again, business doesn't stop. There are results that need to be delivered. But from your perspective, in an organization that's high performing, who's leading that conversation so that there is a moment to pause, reflect, and look at the business maybe from a sort of bird's eye perspective.
I think that, Mark, it's situational, isn't it? I mean, if you take Critical Eye, we would have examples where that the chair is leading that and the board itself is driving that agenda. And then we'd have examples which are the opposite of that, where the CEO is leading that and the board probably are more short term. And so I don't think it's necessary there is one example. What I do think is that you need a balance between the two. And I think if you've got a chair that is quite balanced, you probably have a more operational CEO that works extremely well. And I think conversely, what I think it can does come down to the sort of interrelationship between chair, CEO, and CFO is heightened in this environment. So the alignment between the three, that doesn't mean to say challenge and difference of opinion, but common goal and common purpose. I think what you are seeing is when that isn't aligned, it ripples from there very fast.
It seems I was having a conversation earlier today about actually it was around tech. I mean we've heard it sort of repeatedly in different conversations throughout the year. Obviously, Gen AI has been the big one, but the conversation was around knowledge gap on boards. And again, look, it's going to vary. But is that something you're hearing in terms of maybe that potential frustration between exec, chair, and NEDs around business models are changing fast? Where is the understanding of the business from the chair and non-executive directors? Is that a danger in this environment when you get those gaps in understanding as business models change so quickly?
I think the for 24, I think your biggest challenge is just the volume of things you can have that you're really running. And I think where the frustration comes in is where you get different views in terms of the volume of things that can be achieved, and you don't prioritize. And so for me in 24, it's going to be quite binary. Those organizations that are really clear on what the key core things are they need to achieve and deliver against them and actually wash everything out of the way, I think they're going to really outperform. I think where you've got too many things coming into leadership teams with too many angles, I mean, there's no question that there's still a massive amount of burnout. That there's a massive challenge on the organizational structure. So simplification will continue to be absolutely key, and I think technology plays a huge role in that.
It's an interesting point there that you made about simplification, and also I guess for CEOs and senior leaders, prioritization, because you can get dragged down, can't you? You're going to get dragged into things, and I guess understanding where you can create real impact is going to it's always important, but it's going to be key, isn't it, for 24.
I think that for leadership through an organization is, I think, always vitally important. But when 24 is going to be just massive, because if you look at that sort of you're on 24/7, so there's a danger that you just caught up being sort of tactically doing things. And actually, the point of it is you've got to know what's important and make sure that energy goes in there and that you're fresh. And what I'm increasingly seeing and talking to leaders about is their energy levels. And you can always track organizational performance by the energy levels of the leadership. And as you get towards sort of that tide element, the decision making comes down. And that's through an organization, same with management. So for me, those are organizations that get that energy level right and understand the energy capability of the organization and the pace that it can go at, I think will absolutely outperform.
The people agenda, just to sort of build out on that a little bit. We hear in terms of areas that businesses are prioritizing, if you care to just take a look at our research, and I urge you to do look at our website and our different pieces of research. But look, I just take the Asia Leadership research we just put out. Top priorities for the year. So third in that order, out of the top five, strengthening leadership capability; four, retaining key talent and developing skills; five, culture. It is that, it's the people agenda, isn't it? It's how to try and get that right, and the focus that that's given. We keep coming back to it, don't we? Again and again. Why do you think it's sort of really front of mind at present?
Well, I mean, critical has been going over 20 years, and I don't think that's changed. I don't think in 20 years' time it will change again, unless the computer's properly taken us out, which there's a chance it will, but I don't think in the next 20 years it will. The reality is that you're working with imperfect material, and obviously that through an organization that the people are the sort of the adrenaline driver in terms of change. And I think that you're always going to have this balance between the sort of view at the top and then the operational management and then how that manifests itself down on the street. And so that complexity, yes, we've got technology that means that the gap between those two is shorter, but there's a danger then you sit in the turret and have data flows that actually has no humanity behind it. And I don't think you're successful over a long period of time if you lead a business in that way. So I don't think there would always be that. I think we're at an interesting point around it, because looking at where we are now, I think you're into a position where the true culture of the business is probably exposed. I think through a period in the last few years, it's been slightly skewed because you had a sort of a culture that was slightly strange when people sat at home. Now you've got this really interesting dynamic around work to workforce optimization. You've got really interesting dynamic around the leadership agenda. By the way, that increases the pressure, because a hybrid world where both options are there is a really interesting one from a positive negative perspective, you know, because if you take the theory you can meet in person, that human being is more and more important. But of course, the time pressure that creates. So I think every organization in each geography is still grappling with how you get the balance right. And then you get the simple cost-based structures. You know, the reality of it now, if you take the theory that there's now more in-person experience, but that more in-person experience has gone up 60, 70% since pre-COVID, that in itself is an interesting challenge, because we're at a point where you can't just pass the cost down onto the customer. And that's what makes 24 really exciting. You know, we've had a period where I think organizations have just passed cost on. I think you're going to see that be more and more of a challenge, and you're seeing companies break from it, and you'll see private capital come in and disrupt those that have just pushed the price on. So I think sort of businesses where they're running at and push things onto customers, I think I would really worry for you in 24.
It poses an interesting question as well, because you mentioned chair, CEO, CFO, and obviously that access is essential. But again, the CHRO has a key role to play in this environment. And I mean, do you think in some cases they're getting exposed by the strategic challenges that they're facing in this role?
I don't think it's exposed, but I think there is more pressure around the people agenda, and I think that given the fact that capital is more constrained, you know, generally sort of HR budgets are under more threat. But you've got again significant challenges that you've got sick leave going up, so I think it's complex. I think then you've got organizational restructurings, which is a massive shift. You've got aging workforce in a number of sectors where the competencies are not there. So hence why the people agenda remains key. My personal view hasn't changed. The people agenda is everyone's role. And I think that great HR directors or people directors recognize that. And I think that that's what you need, is you need everyone to be involved and recognizing the importance of that culturally. What I do think is that you've got a lot of pressure on HR now that maybe hasn't been there if you take 12 months ago.
No, I think that's fair. Again, there seems to be a lot of talk, and we'll see how it plays out around M&A activity over 2024. There seems to be a lot of conversation around opportunity and acquisitions that will be made. What's your take on that? Because I guess so much of that will also depend on access to capital and the funding landscape. But there is a lot of dry powder clearly out there too.
There's a lot of dry powder, and there is pent up demand. So, and you've come off a low year. So the sort of analysis is, will 24 be better than 23 from an M&A perspective? Probably. The question of will it be back to the levels it was in 22? Question mark. What I do think is all of our stats say that most organizations are looking at M&A. What I do think is most sectors are consolidating. So, ergo, yes, there will be more M&A work. The really interesting thing is to see what the balance and mix of that is. I think we'd all love to see the public markets come back, because I think a thriving business environment has all options open, and that wasn't necessarily the case for 23, or certainly parts of 23. So my view is that's the really interesting bit to watch for. My hope would be by second half that the IPA market comes back.
What's your take on where private equity is at present? Do you expect it? Because again, huge amounts of it's widely reported, huge amounts of capital to deploy, but clearly funding structures have been blown up with access to finance being so much more expensive. What's your sort of take on that landscape?
Well, I think if you take our private equity members, I mean, they paint to a complex landscape. There's no question it's capital. Though the cost of capital going up does make some of the things less attractive than they were. Getting money out from private equity models is more difficult. Generally, what you're seeing in the exits come through, capital's having to roll. So you can be caught in things for longer. And you've got quite a lot of private equity-backed businesses that are going to struggle. So I think if you take a landscape, there will be more private equity capital deployed next year, because I think that opportunities will become clearer. You're seeing quite a lot of things coming off the market. So I would expect deployment. I think the real question mark is exits. And I think the PE landscape requires the IPO market to come back to properly have a clear exit market plan. And at the moment, that isn't there. So I think that's the thing to track. What you can also say at the moment, there is more pressure exerted by PE owners and the houses themselves on their portfolio companies. And again, I think there's degrees of that that's healthy. So a certain degree is healthy, a certain degree isn't. And I think that if you're sitting in a PE house right now, you've got to get that balance right, because if you just push into the leadership and layer things onto them, you're going to slow down and bog down the business. So that's not an easy thing to get right. And I think, again, that's where a new first-time private equity-backed CEO, it can be a very difficult road to and path to cross, because unless you push back, you're dead in the water. And historically, this is the point where it's more difficult to be a private equity CEO. You've got to hold ground. You've got to challenge more. By the way, that's what the house wants. But it can be pretty brutal and career limiting as well.
Yeah, as well, a relationship with the chair also.
Well, it exposes the competency of the chair. I mean, a good chair will act as a good sounding board. What I would say, and if I go back historically, the period where you can tell a good PE chair is not when they've been running through an easy environment. It's running through a tough environment. We've got quite a lot of PE chairs that have had a kind of easy environment. So I think what you are going to see is you'll see the competency of your chair exposed. If you are a PCO and you haven't got a good chair, give me a call.
There's just a conversation I had last week around, as I guess you could call it a micro trend in US private equity. Currently, the data suggests that there's a lot of, I guess, headhunting, poaching of execs from public companies into PE-backed businesses. And the argument, I guess, is that you're trying to get the best talent and get businesses in the strongest position from a leadership capability perspective for when the markets, I guess, accelerate again. It's a good example, isn't it, of sort of the taking that medium to longer term view, because this is a cycle. This is a, it will turn. And I think it's, I thought it fascinating to sort of hear how some of these PE-backed businesses are planning for when we start moving forward again.
I think they've always been aggressive from a people perspective, Mark. And so, to a certain extent, I don't think that trend is particularly different to what they've always done. I think the question of whether the returns are there, and they also were shipping more CEOs out, so they are faster to move on the leadership. And I would always point out that the elevator doesn't go just up with private equity; it also goes down, and so. It isn't it's an environment which is complex, and as such, you've got different winners and losers, but it's not an easy time to be in private equity if it's your first time and you haven't got independent capital, because you are then beholden to the owner, and that isn't an easy place to be.
What are your reasons to be optimistic for 24 from a, from a board planning perspective? Where do you think businesses can really get on the front foot this year?
On a personal level, I think this is probably the best environment that I've seen from a pure leadership perspective. And again, what do I mean by that? I mean, essentially, if you're a leader, you should be able to cope in a complex environment where there's natural challenges. I think this is a more natural challenge-based environment, and I think you will see a real differential between those organizations that have strong leadership that then runs through the business and those that don't. So for me, I think if you're sitting here now and you're slightly concerned about the competency of leadership, you're going to have to change things pretty quickly, because this is a top quartile performance market. Anyone who's mid quartile is in trouble. Anyone who's bottom quartile is gone. So that's an opportunity, Mark. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, when you have a scenario which tightens up on a marketplace, it creates much more opportunity than when there's free capital available. So capital will flow fast to the winners. And I think that's what you will see fast in 24, is you'll see huge opportunities for those that are the right side of the curve.
Okay. Thank you, Matthew. Always a pleasure to talk this through. We should catch up in 6 months' time and see how it's played out. But thank you for your time, and thank you to everyone else for listening.
Pleasure, Mark. Here's to an exciting 24.
Absolutely. Thank you.